You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, please smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, and if you haven't yet subscribed to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel, please also do that while you're here, okay? Let's get into it. First question, Norlander, why are you so dark? They don't have sun in Connecticut these days?
Well, have you been watching the news? You realize what's going on out there right now?
Yeah, no, I did. I watched the Mets game last night, so I know what's going on.
I mean, I got a semi-nuclear winter situation going on right outside my window right here up in the Northeast. So there are a lot of Canadian wildfires. And yes, no exaggeration, like there is a haze. In fact, I'm in my office here. I'll get to why my screen is so dark in a second. Like in the winter, this room can get cold if I don't turn on the heat. And in the summer, because of all the windows, it can get really hot. So I left the window open. And then this morning I checked, I was like, oh, it smells horrific in here. Fortunately, I filtered it out and we're good to go. But I almost had to not podcast in this office. Air quality is terrible in Connecticut, New York, and much of the Northeast. I know the Buffalo area, to our listeners in and around that area, to our Canadian listeners in Toronto, hope you're doing all right. It's truly brutal. Now, as for this situation, my work-issued Mac stopped taking a charge over the weekend, so I need to ship that out, get it fixed. The hard drive's good, but the battery stopped working. So I'm on a backup computer. In fact, I'm on the Gusters for Lovers laptop right now, if you must know. And because of that, I do not have the software linked to my normal tripod HD camera. So I'm coming to you from my Mac, my onboard camera. And so here we are. So that is why I am looking a little bit different these days. Oh, and oh, by the way, one more thing. Same day the computer crapped the bed, fridge broke. Done.
Oh, no.
So I am apparently getting a refrigerator delivery at some point in the next 15 minutes to 4 hours. So it could happen on the middle of this podcast. And I can only hope that I have your good fortune and they accidentally deliver two, but I'm only banking on one.
Lowe's would not stop delivering me refrigerators. Like this last time we got a refrigerator, I was like, dude, you've already brought it. Why are you bringing me another refrigerator? They just kept bringing them. Like their paperwork was terrible. So I should correct myself before somebody else does. I said, oh yeah, I know what's going on in New York because I watched the Mets game last night. The Mets were in Atlanta last night, but I did see the Yankees game last night, and I know that I understand what's happening in New York City. I hope you guys areas. I hope you guys get all that straight quickly. All right. Hey, it's a mailbag episode.
Yeah.
And mailbag episodes are typically a byproduct of there ain't nothing else to talk about.
Like, unless you want to go deep on Olivier Kamwa to Michigan right now.
And so we start with Olivier Kamwa verbally committing to Juwan Howard's Michigan Wolverines. Like,
he's a good get.
He's a good player. I'm happy for Michigan. Hopefully he'll be terrific for them, but doesn't seem like the type of thing you lead a national college basketball podcast with. Mm-hmm. So we've got a mailbag put together. The way this happened is Norlander said, hey, why don't we do a mailbag? And I'll go get all the questions, and then you can look at them later. And so that's exactly what we did, and now here we are.
We got them. By the way, we got mostly prepared ones. We got a question in the chat about this George Washington mascot. I got thoughts. We'll get to it before the end of the show. But we do have mailbag questions. I do, before we get to the questions, I'd like to at least give a little love to the people that take the time to send a few notes that aren't questions here. So before GP reads the first one, I am going to share with you some quick correspondence. One is from the middle of the season that I just kept forgetting to mention. I want us to take a note of this for next season. Okay, there's an ongoing pattern here. So Evan from Boston wrote, again, this is the middle of the season. Do you subscribe to the notion that this year's national champion will be from one of the top 12 from this year's week 6 AP poll? In case you didn't know, that's been the case from every tournament since 2004. The week 6 AP poll, one team ranked in the top 12 of that specific poll, week 6, has gone on to win the national championship. You know what, Parrish? It happened again.
Yeah, because like UConn at that point was like probably top 5 in the country.
UConn was third. It was Purdue, Virginia, UConn, Bama, Houston, Tennessee, Texas, Kansas, Arizona, Arkansas, Baylor. Duke was the top 12. Lo and behold, there we have it. Evan, we appreciate the correspondence. Evan or someone else, literally remind us this in like week 5 of next season. Someone take a note. Parrish and Nada and I will absolutely forget about this, but I do want to make it a mini segment in the middle of next season. Want to give a shout to Paul from Midlothian, Virginia, who said, what's with the continued reference to Mick Cronin as the greatest coach ever at UCLA? I like your podcast. You may think that's funny, but it's totally disrespectful to the most accomplished coach in history. Stop. It's not funny. I think we had someone else also send something like this on the last mailbag podcast. People, stop sending us these emails. Okay. Accept it. Mick Cronin's the greatest in history. Andrew from Carmel, Indiana writes, I just want to let you know that I've successfully convinced my entire family, multiple teachers, and countless peers that one Elvis Presley did indeed attend UMass Lowell. Of course, no convincing should be necessary, but it turns out very few have been enlightened to the truth. I'm putting the work here in Indiana. Andrew from Carmel, Indiana, we appreciate that. And to other listeners, if you'd like to continue this ruse on an unsuspecting nation, we do sincerely appreciate it. I got one more. Ryan McGee writes, I'm a longtime listener of the pod. I remember when Goodman, Borzello, and Vecini were on, in addition to when Norlander brought on Greg Doyle. That did happen way back. So McGee's an OG listener. We always appreciate our OG listeners. Thanks for the work you two have done. All the enjoyment I've gotten from stumbling across CBS Sports' college basketball site for 15 plus years now has led to spending some time chuckling at camel fighting dodo birds. Dead arms, dead legs, that time Norlander found a dead deer in his yard, or when GP's kids left the hose running all night. If either of you decide to trip to Albuquerque to see the pit at its apex, give me a shout. P.S. I saw Umphreys McGee. Appreciate you, Ryan. Umphreys is the absolute best as well. And yeah, I remember that. When your kids left the hose on all night.
I haven't even told you the most recent one. If I would have known we were going to talk about this, I would have sent out of the picture. Here's what my kids, my youngest son, Louie, did on two Sundays ago while I was at the golf course. Can you see that?
Yeah, that appears to be for our listener audience. We've got some graffiti situation. I'm going to assume that's GP's house, and I don't even want to guess what he's trying to depict with that.
Do you know what this dude did? He went in the garage, found a black can of spray paint for our white brick house. And you know what he wrote? He wrote Oliver. He wrote his brother's name. He was trying to frame his 9-year-old brother. Yeah. He got caught in the middle of the act. But what he was trying to do is write Oliver on the side of the house. And then he was going to tell on Oliver, Mom, Dad, did you see what Oliver did? And instead, he got caught right in the middle of the act and had spray paint all over his hands. And it was a tough situation. So if anybody knows how to get.
How recent is this?
Two Sundays ago.
It's still in the house?
Oh, yeah. The lucky thing is this is the side of our house in the backyard. Like, literally nobody will ever see that other than our pool guy, right, and our lawn people. But still, you don't want that on the side of your house. So I've got to do something to get it off, but I haven't done it yet. I've been busy. Olivia Kamwa committed to Michigan. What do you want me to do?
Olivia Kamwa committed to Michigan. That's right. That's a tough scene.
Always something, man. Always something around.
Want to get to some questions here?
Yeah, I guess we will. Now, I will. You assign the questions.
Yes.
And I looked at them, and I immediately texted you and Nada and said, we should cut these. We should cut some.
We're going to get it done.
And you said, we're going to get it done. We're not off to a great start, by the way.
Hey, listen, the clock starts now. I think we can do this in 45 minutes.
Okay. I did delete one question, and I don't remember which one it was because I did it last night.
It better not be the KenPom question that I literally went to KenPom to get his input.
I did not delete any of yours. I deleted one of mine just because I thought, I don't know. I honestly don't even remember what it was. I just remember not liking it at the time. But we still have 11 questions, I guess, that we'll get to. So let's start with the first one. It comes from Mike in Beverly, Massachusetts.
Yes.
And he wanted to hit us with a trivia time. It's a trivia time.
I know it. The question is, did you look up the answer?
Okay. I swear to God on my little guy's life.
Well, I don't know how much that means.
Which is less valuable today than it was, say, 2 weeks ago.
He is defacing your property, so I don't really know how much.
He's a graffiti. I've raised a graffiti artist. You know, I've raised a graffiti artist. I swear to God, I did know the answer, but I did then look it up to confirm it. But I did know the answer. Here was the question: heading into the 2023-24 season, what team has the longest active winning streak in the country? And the answer, and I did know this. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I didn't know the school. It's Joe Gallo's Merrimack Warriors, right?
It is Merrimack. And the number of games is?
11. I looked it up. They won the conference tournament, and then they were not eligible for the NCAA tournament because of a stupid rule that we've talked about before. They will now enter the next season with an 11-game winning streak. That's an answer to a trivia time. And again, I looked it up to confirm it, but that was my first guess.
Do not look at the chat because we have someone who has jumped me on. I was going to trivia time you off that trivia time.
Go ahead. I'm not looking at the chat.
Who's 2 and 3 on the list? Longest winning streaks, active winning streaks. They're active going into next season.
Yeah. UConn.
UConn's 2. Who's 3?
Whoever won the NIT. I don't even remember. The conference. It was a CUSA school.
Who won
CUSA,
the NIT?
CUSA school.
Yeah. Who got it?
I don't remember.
Come on. Coach is now at a different school.
Oh, is it? Did North Texas didn't win it, did they?
North Texas won it.
Did they?
Okay. On a 5-game heater under new coach Ross Hodge heading into next season. That's your first part of your trivia time. Spread the news to all your buds and trivia time along College Hoops in the middle of June. All right, I got another trivia time.
Okay, let's go.
Michael Cartman writes, Alabama has had 3 of their staff members get hired as head coaches this offseason. What other Division I team has done the same? Shouts to postmarital sex from your most loyal septuagenarian podcast listener.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael Cartman.
Okay. I remember I remember seeing this question last night. I did not take the time to look it up, but off the top of my head, and I did not look this up, but this is what popped into my head, and I have no idea if it's right. It feels like a few years ago after Lon Kruger went to the Final Four at Oklahoma that everybody got hired.
Okay, so that's what this question is. That's not correct because Carlin Hartman was an assistant and he did not get hired, but I think, yes, he had 2 other staffers get hired. I went through the process of looking at this. It did not apply to a school this season. So I don't have the answer.
Okay, great. Trivia time with no answer.
Oh, listen, we're keeping up a trope here. However, there is a Division I program at the Power Conference. Trivia time!
Okay.
There is a D1 program at the Power Conference level that lost 2 assistants to head jobs. Can you name that program in 3 guesses?
You mean
This offseason, a Power Conference program lost 2 assistants to head coaching jobs.
Okay, so we've already eliminated Alabama from this conversation.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Yeah, Alabama doesn't count. Yeah.
Lost assistants who became head coaches.
Let me know if you need a hint.
I need a hint.
You make the first guess, and then I'll nudge you in the direction.
Well, like nothing is even popping into my head. Like I'll know it when I hear it, but
I wouldn't say the assistants were like they didn't go to big schools.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Maryland.
Okay.
Grant Billmeyer. Grant Billmeyer went to FDU. And then Tony Skin went to his alma mater, George Mason. So there was 2 this year. Mm-hmm. If you were listening in the chat, or listen, Michael Cartman hit us back. I don't know the other school that lost 3 assistants who had job in 1 single season. Next.
Let's stop for a second. And I don't mean to get, is it appropriate to say head job all the time?
Is that a problem?
It's just like when I was a kid, that was a term used to describe something else.
I know a different term, but okay.
Yeah.
Never used that term as a kid or with friends.
So I always say
that's what you called it. Earmuffs. Yeah, really, earmuffs. If we got some 13-year-old. Listen, if you're 13-year-old listening to the podcast, maybe just scoot ahead for a quick second.
Parents,
90 seconds, or it's GP, maybe 2.5 minutes. Keep it safe. Go ahead, GP.
No, that is one of the things that it would be referred to. And then you'd have a B job.
Okay.
I'm trying my best here. But like, I always hear people talking about, they'll say, oh man, that assistant.
No one calls it that.
I'm telling you, that was a part of my childhood. Yes. Listen,
if listeners want to, again, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, email the show for any reason, shoutsto cbs@gmail.com. And for future mailbag episodes, shoutsto cbs@gmail.com. We'll try and mix them in. If you use this phrase with your friends, prove me wrong. I have never heard it referred to that.
That was a comment. So I hear people all the time. They'll be like, oh yeah, that assistant at Maryland, he's great. He's going to get a head job soon. And it's like, yo, you can't say that on TV. He's going to get a head coaching opportunity soon, but not a head job. I mean, he might get a head job.
Head job gets the job done, you know? So it's economy of words.
I think that depends.
Okay. All right. Jury's out on it. Let us know.
I feel like it's time to move on. All right. Where are we at? Is this for me? I got a question from Ross.
Sure. Go. Oh, so you deleted. Okay. You deleted the one that wasn't a question. Okay.
I might have. Yeah.
Someone just let us know. I thought it would have been a funny bit for the show. They said, I don't know if you're aware, but you can sort the data on barttorvik.com. You might want to check it out sometime. So yeah, I'm
more interested in a mailbag episode of having questions that we can answer.
I just tried for a little bit of lightheartedness. Go. If that's true, then I think I'm next.
I know, but I took one of mine from the bottom and moved it up or something. I don't know.
Go ahead. Ask the question, Parrish.
It comes from Ross. Okay. He said, do you guys think that Los Angeles will ever be up for consideration for a Final Four? I know that in the past, past locations have a tendency to focus on cities central to the country. But with Phoenix a few years back and Vegas upcoming, is there a chance Los Angeles, SoFi Stadium, might be a future option? I mean, my answer is like, of course. Why wouldn't it be? Right? Why wouldn't Los? Basically, here's what you got to do to host a Final Four. You have to have a dome. And you got to have the appropriate number of hotels to accommodate the people who will travel there for such an event. And Los Angeles clearly has both of those things. I don't know why Los Angeles wouldn't get a Final Four at some point.
I also tried to sneak in a little comment from Ross about Pearl Jam and Steven Hyden because he asked if I'd read the book. I have read the book. It's awesome. If you're a Pearl Jam fan and you have not read Steven Hyden's Long Road, I do highly recommend it. GP and I disagree on this. My understanding, while this might not be the case, I'd love to be wrong, is that because SoFi Stadium, which, oh, by the way, currently doesn't have the proper dimensions to be able to host the World Cup, which seems like a major oversight. Did we mention this on the show recently? Did you hear about that?
There was another prominent stadium that I believe is under the same umbrella in the sense that they don't have, it was built in a way that will not accommodate a World Cup, which makes no sense whatsoever.
It's just like, you knew it was, come on. Because it is open air, there might be an engineering way around this, although I don't know how practical that would be. My understanding is that LA is not currently in the mix to host a Final Four, specifically because SoFi is an open air stadium. Now, I'm intrigued by the minutiae of this conversation in terms of how much wind would or would not play a factor.
Oh, so let me stop. You can't close the roof at SoFi? I don't know. Well, if you can't close the roof, then no, you're not getting a Final Four.
The roof is already closed, but it is an open air stadium. So there's a roof on it.
I got you. Yeah.
And then there's just natural airflow. Okay. That is why hosting Final Fours there doesn't seem to be on the docket, barring someone coming in and alleviating that situation.
There was something I saw. There was some event there and like it was raining and it got to a real bad spot. And
was that SoFi? It was SoFi.
I believe so. And somebody made the point. Yeah, this is what happens when you don't put walls.
Yes.
So I am now remembering that SoFi is unconventional. So I changed my entire answer. No, it's a goofy stadium. You can have concerts there, but you cannot have play basketball in a stadium that has open air walls.
Okay. Let's go blind guess how much SoFi Stadium costs to build. I'm going to say, I'll say $2.7 billion. What's your guess?
$4 billion.
$4 billion. I'm bringing up the wiki right now.
Let's see, I covered my eyes.
Okay, I'm bringing it up. Where's cost here? It's got to be on cost. $5 to $6 billion.
Yeah.
And then you can't host a World Cup.
Imagine if you had to put walls up on that thing.
I know.
It might be another $2 billion easy. I think Los Angeles would be wonderful for a Final Four, but you got to have a stadium with walls.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right. I got another question here. Okay. Actually, it's not a question. It's like a half question.
Okay.
Some people got some issues with you, GP. So okay. We're going to get to this here. I don't know if this is serious or not. Okay. Let's see what GP thinks of it. Michael Schemmel writes, will someone, and this goes back to, I think, something we talked about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month now. Will someone please tell GP that marijuana and cannabis-related substances are banned by the NCAA? Please stop telling NCAA athletes to use vape pens that use cannabis or marijuana substances! Exclamation point. I love the news you guys give, but GP needs to stop his rants that make no sense or are morally reprehensible or outright illegal. Defend yourself, Gary Parrish.
First off, marijuana is not illegal everywhere. All right. It is legal in many states, including my home state, as long as you have a medical license to purchase. So the idea that it's illegal, just broadly speaking, that's not true.
But by the NCAA, is it still?
The NCAA doesn't test you, I don't believe, until the NCAA tournament.
That is my understanding as well.
Yeah. So get high up until the NCAA tournament. And then
Michael Schemmel is going to have an issue with this. Whole thing.
Just get high with vape pens or gummies. But like cut it out when it's time to go to the NCAA tournament. Easy, right?
I guess. Why did we get to talking about vape pens the last time?
Because the guy who was committed to Alabama was in a
car. That's right. That's why he got busted.
They didn't just search his car for no reason. They smelled weed. And then they said, we smell weed. Now we have to search your car. And then they found weed and I think 3 loaded guns. And then he lost his scholarship opportunity in Alabama. So my advice, which I think is totally sound advice, if you're going to smoke in a car, use a vape pen that has no scent, because then nobody can smell it, and then nobody can legally search your car. I'm not telling people to smoke who don't smoke. If you don't smoke, don't smoke. But if you're going to smoke, be smart about it. That's all.
You're doubling down.
Yeah. Hey, you know what else?
Oh no. What?
No, maybe just, we just go to the next question.
Yeah, I'll just stop right there.
All right, I think that is
smart. That's all I'm saying. Be smarter about it.
Okay, it's your up. Whatever one, I don't know what the order is now, so I'm just gonna take whatever you read whenever you read it.
Okay, should I just read it right off the thing here? Because it looks like we might be out of order.
Sure, whatever one you want to read. Yours are the ones in blue.
Okay, Danny is from Waterloo, Ontario.
There we go. Hope you're doing okay up there in Waterloo. Yeah, I don't know if that's smoke affected or not, but hope you're doing well, Danny.
Yeah, I hope everything's all right in Waterloo. It says, props to GP and Norlander. Big shout out for their trophy segment. The Stanley Cup will forever be the best trophy in North American sports. That Melbourne episode was great. Thank you. P.S. If GP had one day with the Cup, could he parlay that into getting on the Cavender Twins OnlyFans? Could I? I don't have any interest in the Cavender Twins OnlyFans, I don't think. But
okay.
But did you hear about the woman in Australia with the OnlyFans? Do you know the story?
I'm unfamiliar. Continue with your story. My question off of this is, do you have an OnlyFans account? I don't. I don't know generally what this was, but like, do you have to register an account if you want to go on OnlyFans? Because I figure you're the expert on this.
I don't know. I've never registered for an OnlyFans account. I've never subscribed to one.
Okay, listen. The people want to know.
I don't.
So
I don't judge anybody who does it. It feels
the vape pens of apps, I guess.
Yeah. If you want to subscribe to some young woman or old woman's OnlyFans, doesn't matter to me.
Could be.
Knock yourself out. I just have never, hand to heart, I've never done it.
Okay. What's the Australia story?
Okay. Wild deal. So this woman, young woman, she's probably, 19, 20, 21. She got an OnlyFans like lots of young women do these days. And on this OnlyFans, she has premarital sex on this OnlyFans. Okay. She does it. All right. And you can pay her $7 a month and you can watch.
Do we know it's premarital?
Yes, I do. I've confirmed that much.
Oh, so you've done the digging. All right.
Yeah.
So.
She is not married.
Okay.
But she's still doing it. And that is by definition premarital sex. Although if you never get married, is it premarital?
I think so. Do monthly mailbag episodes, they said. The people will want to hear this, they said.
If you never get married, are you technically having premarital sex? Are you just having sex? I don't know. It's a tough
question. If we're going there, if we're going that existential, then all premarital sex isn't premarital sex because there's no assurance that you will ever have marital sex.
Okay.
Something to consider.
Yeah. So this woman, she's having premarital sex on OnlyFans. Like you can subscribe for like $7 a month. And she's got
price down and everything. Okay.
I mean, I read all about this story. I thought it was wild.
Okay.
So I turned it into a radio bit. Like, we spent 20 minutes on it. So this woman's got an OnlyFans and she's got subscribers. And there's this one subscriber. He's got this screen name that is, unique to him. Okay. And he's like always there. Constantly private messaging her, constantly requesting private videos like, hey,
behavior.
If I give you an extra $300, would you make a video of you doing this thing? Right. She was like, sure. Like, that's the business. That's the business she's in. She's making these videos for this guy. She sent him to the he's giving her thousands of dollars. And then she's on her TikTok and she sees that person is watching her TikToks too. Same exact screen name. All right. And I gather when you start a TikTok, you got to put in like your phone number and your email, whatever. And so it showed her this TikTok user who has this screen name, the same screen name as your biggest supporter on OnlyFans is in your contacts, in your phone.
Oh,
this,
no.
This
Where
person's,
are we going with this?
This person's phone number that is attached to this account is a phone number you have locked into your phone. So she narrowed it down to like six people. It's got to be one of these six people, one of whom was her stepfather.
I thought you were going to say brother, but it's all gross. Oh, my God.
Stepfather who has helped raise her since she was 10 years old. Stepfather who still lives in the same house as her. All right?
Man.
So she goes, I think it's him. So she texts him. She says, you need to tell mom what you've done, something like that. He texts back within 2 minutes. Hey, Tay, we need to talk. And it was him. Her stepfather had been, as she said, these are her words, not mine, had been watching her have sex on video with her partner and even requesting private videos. And often while he was doing this, he was literally in the room next to her.
Come on, man.
Stepmother divorced him. You have to, right? There's no coming back from that.
Yeah.
You can't come back from that. There's no coming back from that.
Gosh.
You can't talk your way out of that one.
What if I just said I knew the story and we all avoided that entire thing?
That's it. You can Google it. Just Google OnlyFans.
Good, I'm good, actually.
Australia and stepdad, and it'll pop right up. You'll see it. It's everywhere.
Man, oh, man.
What a creep, huh?
You're telling me. Gosh. All right. Let's talk some college hoops.
You're the one who picked these questions, not me. You picked the questions. I did.
All right. It's time to talk.
By the way, we have talked nothing about college basketball.
That's about to change.
Okay.
That's not true. We mixed in a little Mary Mac.
Yeah, okay? We talked a little Mary Mac and about a stadium we were both largely unfamiliar with.
That's correct. Tim, a Purdue fan from Indianapolis, writes, Don't you think the media is causing Indiana fans undue heartache by continuing to hold them to higher standards than they are capable? Since 1990, IU has only finished top three in the conference 13 times, not first, top three, 13 times, and won a conference title 5 times. How can you reasonably tell the fans that they should expect to be there every year? I went ahead and did the research for the other Big Ten program since 1990. This is Tim's research. If there's an error, blame Tim. I did not fact check this. Top three finishes, conference title since 1990. Michigan State has 21. Purdue has 19. Ohio State 13. Indiana's fifth with 13. Tied with Ohio State, tied for fourth, and then Michigan with 10. Please leave the Hoosiers alone. At some point, you have to help people realize their limitations rather than constantly set bars they can't clear. You guys need to start talking about hashtag bone and start living by hashtag bone more than us. Gary Parrish.
Yep.
Are you causing Indiana fans some undue heartache?
This dude would message his stepdaughter. And he would be like, hey, if you have any green underwear, could you put that on? And he knew she had green underwear because he did the laundry.
Come on, man. Let's talk about Mike Woodson.
I don't think I put undue pressure on Indiana's basketball program. Like, how would I even have the power to do such a thing?
I feel like your influence and commentary over Indiana basketball has been reason for much consternation, specifically as of late. Mm-hmm. They came for you recently.
Mm-hmm.
They came for you.
So, yeah, no, I just think, I think if things break the right, this is what I said, that I don't know why this is even a big, like, crazy thing to say. If things break the right way, I think Indiana can be the second best team in the state this upcoming season and maybe finish in the top 25 at KenPom for the first time in, What was it? It's been a while.
Eight years.
Was it 8 years? Something like that? Yeah, I think they could maybe do that. I mean, I wouldn't predict it. I'm not predicting it, but I think it's possible, and they should shoot for that. It used to be one of the best programs in the country. So I think they should aspire to be everything that they used to be.
I feel like the coverage around Indiana basketball is about where it should be from an expectation standpoint. The fan base obviously has a deserved reputation for being among the most intense and invested and fanatical in the country. There are many others that are right there alongside with them. But Indiana fans see their program as a top five program. A lot of them see them as a top five program in the country. They certainly have not been operating as that. And I feel like the coverage has appropriately been dialed back a little bit from an expectation standpoint. I think some of that is even evidenced in what's to come this upcoming season. Like, Mike Woodson will have a good team. This isn't my in-cement opinion heading into next season, but I don't necessarily expect Indiana to be a top three team in the Big Ten next season. And where Indiana fans land with all of that, I think is pretty interesting. I think they're going to give Woodson a little bit of grace, but it's been a nice first two seasons. And if next season we look up and IU is, say, six in the Big Ten, they'll begrudgingly accept it, but then the pressure will really, really be on for year four, particularly if a guy like Dusty May, who went to Indiana, gets FAU back into the tournament with ease, and then suddenly they're already salivating at this idea that Dusty May will eventually be the head coach there. We'll see if the future winds up going that way. But we had a lot of Indiana correspondence, and I figured I wanted to.
Yeah, well,
at least one question.
Like, in all seriousness, like, I do think it is notable. I was leaning into it the last time we discussed this. I do think it's notable they have not finished in the top 25 at Kenpon since 2016.
Like, it is notable. Yes.
I would not have assumed that's true, but it is true. They have underachieved the past 2 years under Mike Woodson relative to preseason Kenpom numbers. They started at one place and finished lower. That's a fact. What I think is wild is that I've just noticed it. When Indiana fans get bothered by you pointing out facts, they'll say, oh, the reason Gary Parrish is saying these things is because he's mad because we fired his buddy Archie Miller.
A lot of that out there. Yeah.
I don't even know the last time I talked to Archie Miller. All right. And like, I respect him. I think he's a good basketball coach, but like, the idea that we're buddy buddy, that's just not true. Beyond that, you'll get some of this. Like, oh, ever since he was wrong about Archie Miller. Like, I was the only one who was wrong about Archie Miller.
You were.
Do you realize
that? You and Tom Fornelli. That's it.
Do you realize that if on the day Archie Miller was hired, I tweeted, I don't know if this is going to work. I would have been overwhelmed with Indiana fans calling me an idiot.
Forget it.
If I would have said, I don't know. You know, we'll see. If I would have said, every Indiana fan that I'm aware of believed that Archie Miller would be fantastic at Indiana. And so did I. So you ready for this? I was wrong. But you ready for this? So were you. All of you. You were all wrong. And so you just ended up firing him like you fire literally every coach since before Bobby Knight.
It's true. Another amazing, amazing stat. We'll see about Indiana. For us, you know, it is better for our show if Indiana is really, really good. Like, Indiana being the fifth best team in the Big Ten, got a really good fan base, a really knowledgeable fan base. It just doesn't serve the show best. So I'm here to make the show as interesting as possible. And when Indiana's good, that's a very good thing.
Doesn't look like it today.
Okay. Well, you're sure as hell trying. So we'll see with IU, but I at least wanted to address the bevy of correspondence we got regarding the Hoosiers.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Buddy,
you're up.
I can't believe you gave me this long question.
Hey, what, you don't want to read?
It's a lot of reading. Comes from Dan Simon. He wrote, I've decided the biggest issue with all the smart metric rating systems is they only measure a team's performance by its players. This neglects two of the most important factors in college basketball, the coach and home court advantage. Why haven't they found a way to rate and incorporate a coach's ability to win close games, score ATO, or all-time winning percentage? Add in expectation of winning at home, road, or home court advantage, and I think you have a much truer reflection of a team's capabilities. Of course, if you add these components, KU, Kansas, would have the greatest incremental addition to its team ranking. I do think that the coach and home arena are key components not measured in metrics. When only measuring the on-court aspects of a team, you're not measuring all that goes into a game. Let me stop here for a second.
Okay.
Are you sure all that's true? Because I'm not sure all that's true.
I'm about to get to it once we finish.
Yeah, because I believe Ken Pomeroy, let's just keep this to Ken Pom. Yeah. I believe Ken has said in years past that his one way to be good in his system is to have been good consistently in your system. And so that suggests that it does take into account program success which is largely going to be tied to whoever the head coach is. So I would assume that some of this is baked in there somewhere, right? Or no?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
I thought so.
Yes. Dan Simon also is a big DMB fan, so he got in there. I'm seeing him Friday, Dan. So thanks for the note there. You also had Lynn from New Jersey say, I'm a new listener. It seems like this season, everyone, including you, although you may have discussed it before, is talking about KenPom. Who or what is KenPom and why should I care? So 2-1. Now, I went with this exact question from Dan. I went to Torvik and I went to Pomeroy. And here's what they said, okay, about why aren't you taking the coach into account? Why aren't you taking home court advantage? Wait until you hear where Torvik is right now. But Pomeroy first. He said, the ratings thing is complicated. A team's rating is an estimate for its strength on a neutral court. So if we assume Kansas has more home court advantage, their rating would actually get worse. Also, the ratings are not just measuring the players, which Dan assumed was the case. They're measuring everything that produces the final score. So some coaching gets naturally included, though I would be open to small close game bonuses when making predictions for self and Allen Fieldhouse. Meantime, I went to your guy, Torvik. Did you know you can sort the data?
I did know that. Been doing it for years now.
First of all, I texted Torvik. He said, greetings from Mauritius. Trivia time. Where is Mauritius?
Oh, that's up in...
Where is Mauritius?
Yeah, that's... I think...
There we go.
I think it's southern Montana, I believe.
It's a puddle jump off the coast of Madagascar. He's in the middle of the Indian Ocean right now.
What is he doing over there?
I have no idea, but I hit him this. He goes, greetings from Mauritius, where I'm having some rum, but I'll give this question a shot. And then he sent back, here's his explanation. I got three graphs worth, but I think it is worth addressing because, frankly, the pod, we do reference Pomeroy, Torvik, Sagarin, and the like often, and for those that might be interested in why we do that and what these rankings mean, I thought this was a very good question. He said, I have a couple of thoughts. First, the difficult aspect of this question is that it assumes that these aspects of coaching skill and home court advantage are very important factors for judging team quality that somehow do not reveal themselves in what our systems use to judge teams, which is basically margin of victory. Yes, Bill Self is a great coach and Fog Allen is a great home court advantage, but both of those facts get incorporated into the ratings because they help Kansas beat good teams by a lot of points. I don't think Kansas is perpetually underrated in T-Rank or at KenPom. Second, we would love to be able to incorporate anything we can to measure that improves the predictive power of the ratings, but there's just no low-hanging fruit. KenPom does track individual team home court advantages, but to my knowledge, has not incorporated them into the ratings. And if you look at those home court advantages, generally what you see is that teams at altitude have unusual advantages, but other than that, it's not particularly intuitive and seems somewhat random because the number one thing that predicts whether a team plays well at home or whether it plays well is whether they're at home or on the road. In other words, most teams are good at home and good on the road and vice versa for bad teams. Last thing, things like performance in close games are tantalizing data points, but usually turn out to be fool's gold. For example, the best teams don't play close games. There was a good joke on Twitter last season about Dan Hurley and how he refused to win close games because they just blew everybody out. In quote unquote close games on my site, 6 points or fewer or decided in OT, UConn was just 1-5. Should I have docked them in the ratings for this? I don't think so. Basically, whatever signal there may be in that kind of data is drowned out by the noise. Back to my rum. Very enlightening answer there from Torvik, and thanks to Pomeroy as well. So, lesson is, the play, everything that goes into a result is automatically baked in, and coaching is a part of that. I've long held that belief as well, but it is a valid question, and I have heard people kind of bring that up before.
You bring up Bill Self, or they bring up Bill Self. Bill Self got brought up. Did you see the quote from him the other day?
I did not.
Bill Self was meeting with the media. You know what he said? It's a wild thing for this guy to say. He said, we're getting ready to take this thing to another level.
He did.
I swear to God.
Well, like, why didn't we fire up the emergency podcast machine when he said that?
Dude, hold up. If Kansas is about to go to another level, they won a title 2 years ago, number one seed last season, preseason, going to be preseason number one heading into next season, and Bill Self is ready to take it to another level that the place has never been. That's what he said. We're going to take this to another level where we've never been.
I think he needs to consult with the scientists at MIT because I don't know if such a level is even known to exist.
Dude, this is going to be what? The reason Gonzaga and UConn decline invitations to the Big 12. They're like, listen, we would do it. We would under normal circumstances, but Bill Self just said he's taking things to another level, and he's basically got one of the best teams in the country every year. I think he's been a number one seed in 10 of the past 16 NCAA tournaments, and he has decided now's the time to take it to another level.
And that's the thing is, like, he had not met with the media for quite a while. He knew that it was coming, and he knew what he had to say, and he thought about it. He said, "You know what? I've made up my mind. This thing's going to another level."
What level can they go to? They win their league basically every year. They're a one seed more often than not. What level are they going to? Do you think he's going to try to win an NBA title or a Stanley Cup or something?
Try and win an NBA title while coaching college. That would be a new level. I got to admit, maybe it's Bill Self. Anything's possible. Maybe he's got something in mind. I'm not all that aware.
He's got just about as many draftable players on his team as the Miami Heat do. Miami's entire team's undrafted. I don't see why we couldn't put Kansas in a best of seven with them and see what happens. And before anybody quotes that, I'm joking. Obviously, Kansas cannot play with the Miami Heat.
It's too late. You said it. They're going to cut it off, share it on Twitter, and then we're off into the races. Mm-hmm. Parrish, to the other part of that question, what is KenPom and why is it important to you?
A serious answer?
Yeah.
I think it can confirm or deny what it is you're seeing. So if you say, man, this team is great offensively, well, then there's some data there that is that true or not? You know, mm-hmm. like before these advanced metrics existed, and I still see it all the time. Some people on TV, they'll say stuff like, oh, this team really gets up and down. And then you go look at the numbers, and it's like, they really don't get up and down. So why are you saying that? So it is helpful to me. It makes you smarter about the things I'm getting paid to talk about and write about. And you can say, you know, about 40%, you know, nearly half of Alabama's field goal attempts are going to come from 3-point range. And it's confirmed with what the data shows. I use it not as a crutch. That's the wrong word, but it's a way to make you hopefully smarter. Because you can study all the data and have a pretty good idea of what this team is about. It gets complicated, but you want to reference the good information, and then you also want to give credit to where you're getting it from. And then people go, God, you just say KenPom all the time. But otherwise, you're just stealing somebody else's data and presenting it as your own. So you want to give proper credit, but if you give proper credit to everything you're referencing, well, then it just sounds like you're saying KenPom, Bill Self, Kansas, KenPom, and KenPom.
Level. Yeah. New level. And plus you can sort the data. All right. Good to know.
I wish Ken would create a data point for taking things to another new level.
He might be doing that for all we know. Work on that, Ken. Anything could be possible.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Caleb from Kansas City writes, I'm indeed one of us. My question is, do you think over-reliance on certain offensive and defensive schemes are a hindrance to program success? We've seen programs like Virginia blossom under Tony Bennett's play style to the point of winning a national title. Other programs such as Alabama have put together impressive seasons, but continue to fall short in the throes of March. As a Missouri fan, I'm a bit nervous about hearing Dennis Gates reference his willingness to concede rebounding in favor of forcing turnovers and playing in transition. Should I be confident in my team's ability to execute a few things better than 99% of other teams, or should I be worried that my team's weakness in certain areas will be exposed when it matters most? I actually think this question gets to the heart of what a lot of people that would listen to this kind of podcast, that follow college basketball year round, that know their teams inside out, that are very aware of like who's on the roster. This is the stuff that some fans do worry about and think might be things that either are holding teams back or might be the reason for their success overall. To Caleb's question specifically, is it good for coaches to have a certain philosophy that might be at the expense of other things? Or do you think it's better to have that identity because it makes you more likely to be more successful in the long term? Broadly speaking, GP.
I think that in the NBA today, you have to more or less play a certain way to succeed at the highest level. There are certain ways you cannot play in the NBA. You just can't. Like, hey, we're going to full court press. You can't, like, we're 40 minutes of hell. You cannot do that in the NBA. All right. So there are certain ways in the NBA you simply cannot play. Perhaps I overstated it a little bit. Maybe there's multiple ways to play and win championships, but there are certain ways you cannot play and win championships. You can't play and win at all. In college basketball, and feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think you can play any style, and you could. If you've got the proper players and they know how to do it, you can win at the highest level of the sport. And we've seen it over and over again. Like we've seen, even today, you can win the NCAA tournament playing with a traditional big. You can play. We've had Nolan Richardson winning with 40 minutes of hell, national championship. Tony Bennett, like literally the opposite of that.
Yeah,
wins a national championship. I think. You can, you know, people will point in Alabama and say, yeah, they're fun to watch, but they really are getting, you know, removed from the NCAA tournament earlier than they should be. And some people will assign that to style of play. But and when they say style of play, what they mean is all the 3-point shooting, you know, like nearly half their shots come from three. Villanova won a national championship, roughly half their shots coming from three. I think you can win it with any style in college basketball if you're good enough at it and you got the right players to do it.
Broadly, I think I agree with that, although I will note that Jim Boeheim once won a national championship. Yeah. And though this isn't a one-to-one, you know, Syracuse was on the down swoop for the winter of his career, and he was beholden to a 2-3 zone. It actually broke him this last season where he abandoned it, I believe, more in the context of one season than he ever had before. Not to say that you can't win a national championship if you want to play predominantly 2-3 zone, but maybe you can't. And maybe... can't really tell in the moment. It's hard to really grasp these things in the moment. But maybe right now, where we are in college basketball, maybe we'll get to the end of this decade or the early part of the 2030s, look back and say, that's really when the sport started to shift a little bit to be more like the NBA in terms of there are certain ways you have to play if you want to have success. But it's never going to be at that level. The players are not as good. You have more teams. You have more coaches from different backgrounds. And different styles make different fights. And that is I find that to be a very appealing part of college basketball, that you do have coaches that follow very different doctrines. As to the question, if that is prone to potentially hold a team back, yes, but just as much no, in my opinion. Like right now, if you're a Missouri fan, I don't think you should have that much concern because Dennis Gates just got you 25 wins and you were a 7 seed. And yeah, you did wind up getting absolutely punked by an Ivy League team in the second round of the tournament. I get that. But Gates has proven to be a very, very good young coach. Missouri was tremendous on offense, and through, you know, his young head coaching career at Missouri and then Cleveland State, he was a longtime disciple. under Leonard Hamilton at Florida State. Gates appears to be a good coach. So does that mean that you're not going to get a lot of offensive rebounds? Yeah, that has been his style. You're just going to have to live with it and hope that he can recruit around that. But as a reminder, there's one national champion every year, and you should not gauge your program over whether or not wins. No fan base should, in my opinion, because it's such a high bar to reach. Kansas fans might be the only ones that want to take exception to that. Hey, they're going to a new level. But if you want to gauge it by, are we, you know, in not even just making the tournament every year, is the system that our coach is using, is that putting us in a place where we are easily in the tournament every year and more often than not winning games in the tournament? Then I think that's a fair case. Gates is a little bit too early into his career at Missouri to really have any kind of verdict in on that. But I understand the concern. I think it is an intriguing question. There is no perfect way to play. If there was, everyone would be copying that. It's all about who you can recruit and how you implement your styles. I think it's a major part of why coaches wind up being successful.
Next question comes from Colin McDonald. Buddy,
I actually deleted some names from this list, but the point is hammered home with what he lists here.
All right. Give me about 15 minutes to get
through. He's a huge fan, by the way. Colin sent us a number of emails. I wanted to give him a little bone here. I finally included one in the mailbag. Right.
Give me about 25 minutes to get through this.
Sounds good.
I could either read your Drew Timmy's column or this question. Okay. Which would you prefer?
Let's go with the question.
Okay. Recently, I have been thinking about some of the players who have excelled in the NCAA, but not been drafted highly or even at all. I got to thinking and was able to identify a pretty solid and identifiable group. We all get why teams take big swings and usually miss on top picks, length, athleticism, upside, etc. And I'm not suggesting that these players are top 10 picks. However, winning at the highest level in 2022 or 23 takes A, superstar talent, B, shooting, C, exceptional guard play on both ends. From the top of my head, he looked up at Basketball Reference the following guards: Jamal Tinsley was taken 27th. Steve Blake, 38th. Mo Williams, 47th. Jameer Nelson, 20th. Jarrett Jack, 22nd. Kyle Lowry, 24th. Ramon Sessions, 56th. George Hill, 26th. Goran Dragic, 45. Drew Holiday, 17. Ty Lawson, 18. Jeff Teague, 19. Pat Beverly, 42. Danny Green, 46. Patty Mills, 55. Reggie Jackson, 24. Spencer Dinwiddie, 38. Tyus Jones, 24. Fred VanVleet, undrafted. Monty Morris, 51. Jalen Brunson was taken 33rd. I watch a ton of college and NBA hoops, as Colin continues, and almost to a man could have told you that these guys would have 10-year NBA careers and contribute to good teams if given the chance. Sounds like Colin should be running an NBA franchise.
I like
it. It's not hard to see. I bet if we took a deep dive into the draft, more of those players have washed out than these guys. Memphis is a real-time example, and as a result, we have to listen to Chris Vernon ad nauseum rant about these guys, but they have done a great job of building through the draft. Why are teams not valuing good pros who will make you better in the 20 to 40 range?
Good question, and I brought it in because we're on the precipice of the draft.
I think the most overlooked player from an NBA draft perspective, if we're talking about guys who are really good in college, mm-hmm. it's that if they have they seemingly have physical limitations, and a lot of it will be they're not super athletes or they're small for their position. So Fred VanVleet's a perfect example. If you watch Fred VanVleet on the grassroots level, Fred VanVleet at Wichita State, all he did is win. He ran his team and he won. He was fabulous. Greg Marshall once told me the story about, because I did a story on Fred, I guess after the Final Four, when they got off to that undefeated season start. They were undefeated for a while. And Greg said, when I would go watch Fred VanVleet, who played for like just a local grassroots team, wasn't one of the big Nike funded ones. He played for a team out of Rockford, I believe. And Greg said, Fred VanVleet was unranked, like not a top 100 guy or anything like that. But then I'd go watch him and I forget who he said, but like let's say Marcus Page's name pops into my head. Yeah. But I'd go watch him play against this other point guard who's ranked like as the fourth best point guard in the class, and Fred's team would win. And then the next game they'd play another team, and it's like, oh, this guy's the sixth ranked point guard in the class. And then Fred's team would win. These guys were all supposed to be better than Fred VanVleet. Their teammates were better than Fred VanVleet's teammates, but Fred VanVleet's team won every time. And I was like, the guy just wins. And then he came to Wichita State and they go to a Final Four, and then they have another incredible season. He was great. And yet he goes undrafted. And I remember, I think this is right, Wichita State played Arizona in the NCAA tournament. And, okay, do you remember the Sean Miller moment? Sean Miller had this moment with Fred VanVleet in the handshake line.
Yeah.
And you could see them talking, but it's unclear what they're talking about. And somebody in the press conference, I believe, asked Sean, hey, we saw you have a moment with Fred VanVleet. What did you tell him? And he said, I told him, don't ever let anybody tell you you can't play in that league. You're good enough to play in that league. Don't let anybody tell you you can't. I'm telling you,
yeah,
you can play in that league. Still, he goes undrafted. And he didn't have a great season this season, but he has been great in the NBA. And so why does Fred VanVleet, he was on a Final Four team. He was a conference player of the year. He was an All-American. This ain't some guy who played in some low level. Like, how did they miss on this guy? Because he's short and not athletic. And so they just say, well, he's not going to be able to. But then you put him in the games and he wins. He's an NBA champion. And not all the guys on that list, but a lot of the guys on that list that Colin laid out for us, they're going to one of two things, if not both. They're not great athletes, or they have poor positional size, or both. That's why those guys get overlooked.
Yeah, and this is a great question. It's a complex issue because, you know, there are obviously guys that were also drafted in that range that are of a similar mold that didn't hit, but there are plenty that have. And they've got some sort of element to what GP just laid out to them, or they just, and there's a few non-college players on that list, but when they played in college, they were so clearly very, very good and accomplished, and they had certain attributes to them that would make you think like, yeah, why shouldn't this player be picked 5 to 10 to 15 spots higher than they were? A few names in this year's class, and for the most part, what Colin's bringing up here are guards, guys that are 6'1 to 6'5 for the most part. It's specifically guards that might be either undersized, not that athletic. I don't see an overwhelming amount of them here, but to Colin's point, will we look up in 5 years' time and see that, you know, Kaysom Wallace, he's going to go anywhere from 13 to 20. Will he be picked 5 to 7 spots too late? You know, Jordan Hawkins quite clearly looks awesome and may not go top 10. Will we look up and he's like the fifth best player in this class? Will Hawkins specifically, he fits, I think, to the emailer's point on this overall. Nick Smith Jr. has had some injury issues, but like he actually, from an athletic standpoint, like he's thin, but he kind of fits the mold. He's going to probably get picked later. He was once projected to be a top 10 pick. Now no one thinks he's going to go there. He could be one there. Andre Jackson Jr. has all the athleticism. He obviously looks like a player that can be a long-term NBA player. He just doesn't have the shot. Will he grow into it? And then we'll look up in 5 years and be like, why the hell did Andre Jackson Jr. go 29th when he's the 10th best player? That is inevitable. I think sometimes general managers, and it's to no fault of their own, they will see players and they have all these ways of testing, and the scientific methods around drafting players now is so much more advanced than it was even 15 years ago that they try and land it with projections. There is no perfect way of doing it. And a lot of it is fit. A lot of it is player. It's where you go, who you play for, the city you go to, all these other factors that go into it. But I have long found it fascinating. When Jalen Brunson got drafted, I metaphorically pounded the table. I'm like, there's no chance in hell this dude's going to be a second round talent. Like, he is one of the 15 best players in this draft. You can't convince me otherwise. And you know, sometimes I miss, sometimes I hit, but that quite clearly, like, Jalen Brunson's been what, like a top 5 player in that draft. So it is intriguing to see. We will see it happen again. Sometimes, you know, they're just going to take the guy with more perceived upside, even if that means there's a higher chance that that player flames out.
And still to this day, the most important thing in the NBA is athleticism. Now, athleticism on a guy who can't play basketball, that's wasted athleticism. But it's still the most important thing. And you start reading any of these draft profiles, scouting reports, like you'll constantly see descriptions like this. It's a top shelf athlete, but it hasn't shown an ability to reliably shoot. Now, you ready for this? That guy will still get picked. He can't. It's literally in the breakdown. He can't shoot, but he's an incredible athlete.
Yes.
That guy will still get picked. Now, you ready? Let's flip it around. Amazing shooter. Terrible athlete. That guy won't get picked.
Sometimes will, but not always. Yes, correct. There's the inverse is more likely to happen, and it's super interesting to see how that stuff kind of plays out year after year after year. We're gonna wrap up here. I said we'd get out in an hour, but I do want to at least address a listener question in the live chat that I think is worth talking about. Connor asks, Do you think UConn will actually leave the Big East for the Big 12? We can include Gonzaga in here as well. Dennis Dodd wrote a story on Tuesday for CBSSports.com that was more about Brett Yormark's charge to get one or both of those schools into the Big 12. He didn't get too much into the likelihood of that happening in talking with sources about this for a couple of months now. And I think Barry Trammell had this as well earlier this week. He echoed something that I had heard back. And that is at the athletic director level, which is not the decisive level. The presidents are the one that ultimately decide this. But at the athletic director level, there is not an appetite to absolutely get Gonzaga and or UConn into the league, particularly Gonzaga, which does not have football and doesn't up the valuation. Now, it would make an incredible basketball league. I'm not sure. All these things are connected. There were multiple reports that came up before we went on this live mailbag episode about how the Pac-12, in theory, has a grant of rights agreement that has been agreed to by the 10 member schools, which means that if that were to happen and it actually goes through, the Big 12 does not pull Colorado out and it does not pull Arizona or Arizona State out. We will see if that happens. If that were to be the case, would that increase the likelihood that the Big 12 would indeed go after UConn and everything and Gonzaga, which would also be for everything, but it doesn't have football there. What are your, we haven't really talked about this too much on the pod. So GPIM and we haven't talked about it privately. What are your thoughts? Maybe not even if it'll happen, but like, do you think it should happen? Should UConn leave the Big East for the Big 12 when it would make the university a lot more money, but obviously put them a bit of a fish out of water, just as they were in the American, and that wound up pushing them back to the Big East to begin with?
This would not be my normal answer to a question like this, but I think as for this specific question, I think it matters. What do your fans want? Mm-hmm. Like, do your fans want to try to have, you know, big time football, or do they just care about being awesome at men's basketball and women's basketball, and they're much more comfortable doing that in a conference they're familiar with, like the Big East? Like, what do your fans want? I think if you're just like if you think of it as running a business, hey, we're running a college athletic department here, and we're running it like a business, I think the right thing to do is go if you can go. It's I'm assuming wildly more money, and it puts your football program in a legitimate conference and your basketball program in what is arguably, if not undeniably, the best conference in America. So in a vacuum, why wouldn't you want to do those things? But UConn, I think maybe more than any other school, is really connected to the Big East and really comfortable in the Big East. Like, they've already tried to go to a different league once and they decided this is not worth it. Like, we would rather have our men's basketball program in the Big East than have our football program in a legitimate football league. They were willing to sacrifice that to go back to the Big East. So that's why I say, like, it might not matter to them what's the smart thing to do or what's the more lucrative thing to do, as much as we're comfortable doing what we're doing and we don't want to mess with happy. We're happy right now. We don't care about football, and our men's basketball program is the reigning national champion and in a conference with familiar rivals and in a conference that we grew up watching. I know it's not the same version of it, but you get the name's the same. You know, if they want that, then maybe that is reason enough to stay. But in a vacuum, if you were just, hey, nothing else matters about what's other than what's the smartest thing to do for our athletic department as a business, then you would absolutely go to the Big 12 if you could.
It would make the UConn more money, but the fans don't get that money. Like, that's right. And fan feedback was not an insignificant factor in getting UConn back to the Big East in general. Not to say that that was the biggest reason, but come on now. These universities, the athletic departments, these athletic directors, they are very much in tune with what the populace supporting these programs wants and desires. And sometimes that actually can move mountains. It did for UConn. It would be a horrendous mistake for UConn to leave the Big East. I don't care if it's going to give UConn $30 million more per year in its operating budget. That's good for UConn athletics, but you're doing that at what sacrifice? You know, there is something to be said in college sports in general. Now, a lot of this has gotten stripped away and frankly, it sucks, but it's built upon a lot of these things that can be provincial and rivalries and being in an area where you might have a neighbor who, I mean, hell, I live in Connecticut. I got neighborhoods I run through And there's one part of a neighborhood just across the street where if I run past it, one house has got a UConn flag. Two houses down, there's a solid backboard, and the backboard is a Providence Friars logo. And there's that kind of stuff really builds up what gets fans invested in their alma maters or the schools that they want to root for. UConn doesn't care about football. It can invest all it wants. It's never going to matter. It wants to go to the Big 12 so it can be a doormat. It wants to go to the Big 12, which is a better basketball league, making it less likely that it will get higher seeds and better year-over-year records, traveling more. I just don't find it to be worth it. I ultimately don't think that that's going to happen. And not, you know, I can knock on wood. I can be wrong, whatever. I don't think UConn's going to leave the Big East for the Big 12. I'm not convinced the Big 12 wants that to happen. Gonzaga is interesting. Gonzaga, I would absolutely do it if I could. Gonzaga wants to get out of the WCC. We'll see if it can. Mark Few wants to leave that program in a better situation than when he got there. And the Pac-12 was also interested. I was told that the Pac-12 has gone to Gonzaga and said, if and when you do have an opportunity to move, do not make any moves without, you know, talking to us first. And there's a consulting firm, Dodd gets into that, that's kind of guiding Gonzaga through this process there. Gonzaga in the Pac-12 just makes more sense than the Big 12. But if I can get into either, I definitely try and make that move. To me, it makes more sense with Gonzaga. Having said that, and I'll wrap on this, I don't know if Brett Yormark would be content with just one or the other. If he's going to try and upgrade the basketball league, is he going to want to get at least a pair of teams? And if you did that, you would truly make the Big 12 the most national conference in the country, which has its pros and definitely its drawbacks. Like, a lot of this stuff is tied to grant rights and money. And like, you have a team in stores and you have a team in Spokane. UConn and Gonzaga have already agreed to a 2-year like quasi home and home. Like, they're playing in Spokane, they're playing at the Garden. They've already managed that on their own. They don't need a conference to really make that happen. So it is interesting. It's been getting a lot of buzz as of late. We'll see where it goes. I don't know how imminent or not it is. I would prefer that UConn stay in the Big East and Gonzaga getting into a bigger league. I just think it would make the sport more interesting, but we'll wait and see.
Is that a podcast?
I guess so. I did mention my issues with George Washington calling themselves the Revolutionaries. Six-syllable nickname, GP. They could have been the Blue Fog. What are we doing here?
Six syllables.
Four-syllable max on a team moniker. What are we doing? And why don't you go Blue Fog? Doesn't that sound badass? Revolutionaries?
George Washington Blue Fogs?
The George Washington Blue Fog, yeah. Blue Fog would have been cool.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
I don't care what anybody calls himself.
I know.
You call yourself whatever you want. Here, this is something that occurred to me with nicknames, team names.
Yeah.
They all sound stupid until you just decide that they're not.
That's true.
Okay. If think about if the Boston Red Sox never existed, you've never heard that before.
Yeah, I know.
Never.
Yeah, I hear you.
Never heard that before. Yeah. And then you said, hey, you know, GW is getting a new nickname. And he said, what is it? And somebody said, they're going to be the George Washington Red Sox. You'd be like, what?
I'm not disagreeing.
They're naming themselves after Red Sox. Like, that sounds stupid, but that is one of the great franchise names we have.
Yeah, but like,
but
New
it
York
sounds
Yankees,
stupid.
That makes sense given the history there, you know? I hear you. There are a lot of bad ones, but not everyone's bad.
Okay, you ready? Hey, you've never heard this before, okay? So you're starting fresh. You're starting fresh.
Okay.
Hey, I got a baseball team. We're going to put it in Chicago. Oh, cool. What are you going to call it? Cubs?
Yeah.
Chicago
big,
Cubs?
Big bear population in Illinois. People don't know. But Milwaukee Brewers. Perfect.
Well, like, why did the football team get to be the Bears and we got to be the little Cubs?
The Cubs came first, and because it's football and it's tougher, George Halas named them the Bears. That's why.
Yeah, but like, can you agree that naming your team after a baby bear is kind of weird.
I got my Cubs jersey on right now, buddy.
Yeah. Like it's all, it feels normal now because that's all we've ever known is the Chicago Cubs. Great but look. It sounds goofy.
I hear you, but some of them are good.
Like what? Name one.
I just did Milwaukee Brewers. That makes sense.
Milwaukee Brewers is fine.
There's some great ones out there. Seattle Seahawks, bird native to the region. Great. Great one. Seattle Supersonics. Rest in peace.
Here's my point. I can't remember the last time we heard a new name for something, college or professional franchise, and we went, oh, yeah, that's perfect. You ready? Washington Commanders.
Terrible. Terrible.
Cleveland Guardians. Not bad.
They should have been the Spiders. That would have been badass.
The Cleveland Spiders?
Yeah, Spiders.
Why the Spiders?
I believe I believe it was the former name of the professional league way back in the day. And
also, and Spider-Man originally from Cleveland, Ohio. People don't know that. Gosh. He moved to New York very young.
We do have someone saying Seattle Kraken. I thought that was perfect, but that was controversial. Some people hated the name Kraken. Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, everybody. somebody said in the comments, George Washington head jobs. Can't say that. You can't say that. You can't say that.
That's a good place to wrap here.
Yeah. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. And thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Ion College Basketball
Podcast. You love it.
We live down to our reputation in this one. You know, every once in a while, people will say, I like those guys, but they don't really talk about basketball that much.
We got plenty of hoops talk on the back end.
We live down to our reputation today.
We're going to have more hoops coming later this week on the feed.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We'll see about that. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. It needs to be reflected in the comments. And like Deadleg said, we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.